Thank you, Sharon, Paul. Appreciate that. Thank you for those impromptu songs. Felt like 1965 there for just a little bit, didn't it? Well, if you'll take your Bibles and find Galatians chapter 6, I'll get there in just a few moments. Galatians chapter 6. And continuing what I began last week in this little study that I'm borrowing from Andy Stanley on responsibility. And last week we began this little study and discovered a couple of things about responsibility. One of them is the fact that we were created to be responsible. God made Adam and Eve and placed them in the garden before sin entered into the picture, before God gave any Ten Commandments or anything like that. He gave Adam and Eve responsibility. Take care of the garden. We know he did give them one rule, just one, and they couldn't handle that one. But the main thing was they were created to be responsible, to be caretakers of the land, the animals, everything that was present. And then we notice that we're actually the happiest when we have responsibility, when we're managing it well, at least. Because we're created this way, when we're handling that responsibility as we should, we find a sense of contentment. And if we are not being responsible and not doing as we should, then we naturally will feel a sense of guilt, or we're going to feel a sense of worthlessness, or uselessness, or whatever, and that's what becomes discouraging and defeating. And sometimes that's what leads people to do desperate things. They can't get out of that trap of irresponsibility. And then we learn that whenever we have people present, we have to have responsibilities, and also along with that, then, if people are responsible as they should be, then there really would be no need for rules and regulations, would there? I mean, rules and laws are for irresponsible people, those who don't have the sense to do the right thing or have to be told this is what you do and this is what you don't do and here are the consequences if you don't do it or do this thing that you're not supposed to do. But that doesn't always stop people. People still continue to be careless, to be irresponsible, to be reckless, even. And therefore, the next thing we learned was the fact that anyone's irresponsibility means that somebody has to take that responsibility. Somebody has to come along and clean up the mess, carry the burden that's created because of that. Well, as we move in today, we're going to look at Galatians chapter 6 here at a principle that God has given us through His Word that really relates to taking responsibility. Now, there are different kind of laws of nature, we know. The first one that would come to my mind if somebody said, name a law of nature. I would first think of the law of gravity. You know, what goes up must come down. But that's a whole scientific thing. But God created gravity. There are other principles that we could discuss as well. But those are our laws that are fixed and they're set. And there's no way of getting around those things on a permanent basis. And so we come up to another principle that we're given here in Galatians chapter 6, and that's the principle that you reap what you sow. And we'll see how that relates to this whole matter of responsibility and irresponsibility, because the reason irresponsibility becomes somebody else's responsibility is simply because irresponsibility catches up to a person eventually. Because if we're reaping something through irresponsibility, and I'm going to be really tired of those two words before this series is over, I'll try to think of some other words to use in their place, but I don't know if I will. But that is sowing. If we're not taking responsibility for something that is given to us, we are sowing irresponsibility that will reap consequences. That is a principle that never will fail. And so, just like the law of gravity, the law of sowing and reaping isn't necessarily good or bad in every case. I mean, sometimes we're sowing bad things, sometimes we're sowing good things, but the law itself is not a negative thing. And gravity is a good thing in the sense that it's keeping us here on the ground. But the law of gravity can be a bad thing if we're trying to do something that the law of gravity is going to have other consequences for. So if you jump off the top of the Hancock Building in Chicago, you're sowing something, and you will reap the law of gravity. You will go down unless you have a parachute to cushion your fall. So God has given us these laws, and He's given us principles and scriptures, and then we have the opportunity to leverage those principles to our advantage or for the glory of God, or to use them to our advantage that is not for the glory of God, selfish purposes, careless purposes. So let me read here Galatians 6, these first nine verses. Brethren, even if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself so that you too will not be tempted. Now, just hold up there. In that verse, I think right away you should recognize responsibility and irresponsibility, right? If anyone is caught in a trespass, someone has been careless. Someone has been neglectful. Someone has not been obedient. Someone has not been responsible in their Christian life. And they have committed some kind of sin. So that means somebody else has to come along and bear that burden and do something to try to correct it, to try to restore that individual. And then the person who is doing the restoring or the people who are doing the restoring are to do that, they're responsible to do it in a spirit of gentleness. Now, if we become irresponsible and become harsh and judgmental and seek punishment, then we are creating further consequences. We're sowing something that is going to reap something negative. But at the same time, the one who is doing the restoring has another responsibility, and that is to look to yourself so that you will not be tempted. So you can see how that whole principle, responsibility, irresponsibility, sowing, reaping, is woven within so much of what we do. Now, reading on then in verse 2. Bear one another's burdens, and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But each one must examine his own work, and then he will have reason for boasting in regard to himself alone, and not in regard to another. For each one will bear his own load. The one who is taught the word is to share all good things with the one who teaches him. Do not be deceived, God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, this he will also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So, one of the principles we can draw from this, then, is that each of us has a responsibility to carry our own load. Carry our own load. Now remember, Galatians is written to people in the city of Galatia, believers in a church there. Paul himself had founded that church. Galatia was located in the Roman province of Asia Minor. And this letter was written about 35 years after Jesus had departed back to heaven. And churches were springing up all over the place, up and down the coastlines. But Paul wrote this particular letter to these believers. They were especially precious to him, especially when he, you know, was the one that started that church. So he would have a natural affinity toward those individuals there. But he writes them this letter to tell them basically, you know, a lot of things about Christian growth and some of the things they needed to do and some of the things they needed to avoid and, you know, get away from the legalism thing and that type of information. But in chapter 6, then, he's talking about this law of sowing and reaping, but he says a lot of other things that surround this before he gets to the actual statement of the principle down in verse 7. But he's kind of contrasting our responsibility to help others who have need, who have burdens, or who have been careless and sown irresponsibility or sin, our responsibility to them against the tendency of people to not take responsibility. How do we manage this? So if we jump now down to the middle of the passage here, let's not go to the middle. That's verse 3. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. For if anyone, but each one must examine his own work, and then he will have reason for boasting in regard to himself alone and not in regard to another. Now, what's that got to do with all of this, the matter of taking responsibility and sowing and reaping? Well, Paul is just suggesting to us that it's very easy to deceive ourselves by doing this comparison thing, by looking at other people, other Christians, and seeing that, well, you know, I'm not so bad. I'm not quite as good as others. Maybe I'm not doing that well, but I would say, you know, on the scale here, when I look around at everybody, I'm pretty average. I think I'm okay. Not too bad, not overly good, but I'm doing okay. And we're contented with that. Some people are, anyway. Sometimes they get competitive. They see somebody else that's succeeding and think, that's what I better be doing, because if that's where it's happening, that's where the attention is, I better do that. That's dangerous. Or the tendency is to look at other people and say, they're not doing anything, and they're doing all right, so why should I exert myself? So I think I'll just sit back and relax also. That's not a good way to be. And we deceive ourselves, we fool ourselves. We start thinking that way. So Paul suggests to us that we have to hold to our own standard. Now, that's not saying that we set our own morality and then we live by that. No, it's suggesting that there is a standard that is set for each of us. We each have a responsibility to what is been given to us, what God has been given to us, and what standards the Lord has given to us. And so I am not to examine myself in respect to anybody else. I'm to examine myself in regard to what I've been given to do. And then he says, as long as you do that, then you're not going to make excuse. You're going to be able to boast in that. Boast in regard to yourself alone, not in regard to another person. What does that mean? Well, it's not the sinful kind of boasting. He's talking about taking pride in yourself, but again, not the sinful kind of pride. Another way of saying that is that you can feel good about yourself. Maybe that even doesn't sound right. Maybe I should say you will have a more honest sense of contentment, because you will know that you have done your best with what God has given you. You've proven yourself responsible before Him, and that's what really matters. So it's not a matter of, am I doing as good as that person, or is that person doing as good as me? It's what have I been given to do? Examine my own work, because that's what I'm to answer for. And so he says in verse 5 then that each one will bear his own load. Our own load. Our own burden of responsibility. And we all have those. They may be family responsibilities. They may be financial responsibilities. They may be opportunities that he's given to us. Work-related, school-related, home, whatever. They are all matters that are specific to us. And that, then, is how we need to get away from this comparing our opportunities with the opportunities God gives to somebody else. He's going to give somebody else greater responsibility, perhaps, than he's given you or me. Some people are going to be given less responsibility. But I'm not responsible for the way they do it or the way they discharge their duty. I may become responsible if they neglect it and make a mess, and then I have to help bear some of it and clean it up. But at the same time, my first responsibility is to bear my own load and examine my own heart. Focus on managing the things that God has given me to do. Now, in verse 7, he bears down a little harder when he says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked." Whoa, stop there. Why would we do that? I mean, none of us would want to intentionally deceive God. But if we do try to deceive Him, we are mocking Him. Now, it's easy to deceive people. I mean, probably most of you one time deceived your parents, didn't you? I never did. We all probably have, or at least tried, I'll put it that way. A lot of people can deceive their employer, their boss. They can look busy when the boss is around, but they really don't have anything to do or don't not really get the job done. But, boy, when the boss is around, they can look busy. Students can deceive their teachers. Unless David Huffman is your teacher, then you can't. But students can get away with things. They can, you know, take the easy way around. But most of us learn the hard way that teachers are a little smarter than most students give them credit for. There are people that deceive me. I think I got ripped off the other day. Actually, the church got ripped off. We get a lot of calls from people that have needs. We need money for this or that, and usually we quiz them a little bit and ask them if they've checked with other agencies that we work through, and they have, and they won't help them, and all of this. Sometimes they stop in, and I need gas money to get here or there, and they've been driving around all day long, burning gas, trying to get money for gas. But, you know, it's really hard sometimes to try to discern the legitimate needs from the ones that just come from pure irresponsibility or laziness. And those that have true needs, we want to be able to help. We want to be willing. Sometimes we just have to stick our neck out a little bit and realize that, you know, we just might get tricked. But Thursday morning, I was here a little earlier, and I needed to get are the few things I needed to look over on my Sunday message. I had it finished, but there was a point I wanted to develop a little more, and it was the passage. I was getting into the context of the passage this morning in Ephesians, and I was studying there and reading the context, talking about love. You know, and it's the Christ working in us that enables us to love as we should. And I had just jotted down in my notes the ability to love the unlovely. And as I did that, then I hear the ding chime on the door outside the office. Nobody was there yet. Wendy wasn't there yet. And I was just me. I think there were a couple cars upstairs for the ladies' Bible study, which is usually what draws people in, because if they see cars in the parking lot, then they'll come on in and ask for money. But usually our cars are all down below, and there are no cars up above, so we don't get the traffic like we used to. But I hear this chime, so I go to the door, and there's a fella standing there, and I crack the door open, and he said, "Hi, I'm so-and-so, and I just need to talk to somebody. I just got out of Bronson Hospital. I've got cancer. They told me I have 3 months to live, and I just need to talk to somebody. I just need to pray." And he was really down. So I thought, okay, come on in. So I brought him in my office, sat down, and he said, "I really don't want anything." And my first thought was, "We'll see about that." I know the old trick. But anyway, he told me this long story how he was a fireman in New York during 9/11, and he had all the details down, and how the ladder company he was with, all but five of them survived, and he's got cancer now because of that, and because of all of the stuff he was breathing. And he told me how many other people on the department he knows that have the same cancer, and some have already died from it, and how all of them have been neglected. The government won't help them out with their needs, insurance, and everything else, and they're just kind of left on their own. He was a frail guy. He said he used to be 200 and some pounds and muscular, but this cancer just devastated him, and he's just 134 pounds now. And he showed me he had lifted up his shirt, and I could tell he had had some surgical procedure there. He still had the IV thing in his leg, a tube, a port that they put in there, and I had the band on his wrist. I checked that out, had his name, Bronson Hospital, and his date of birth and everything. And his story was he had come over here to, he has an uncle that lives over here in Kalamazoo area, and he was over here to visit him, and his uncle died, and then this gentleman got sick too and ended up in the hospital, in Bronson Hospital for 30 days, and recently discharged, and he just needs to get home. He just needs like $130 for gas and toll to get back to his home in upstate New York. And, you know, I've heard these stories over and over again. And if it hadn't been for the fact that I was just had studied and wrote down this, God enables us to love those who are difficult to love, and loving as Christ would love, I probably would have excused the gentleman and, "Sorry, we can't help you." And we have a number that we can call, this 211 number. And I asked him about that. And yeah, he's tried that. And they just directed you to Salvation Army, and they wouldn't help him. And the Deacons Conference wouldn't help him. They don't give cash. I said, "We typically don't give cash either. We don't keep it around here. If we were giving out free money, we'd have people lining up at the door." And he was, feeling kind of discouraged. And there was just something that I got to do something for this guy, but I'm not going to go get into petty cash. And Wendy, well, I should tell you where it's at, and you'll break in and take it. I'm not going to go get cash, and I only had $4 on me anyway, myself. So I just kept asking him more questions and saying, "Well, how about this? What about that?" While at the same time, I'm running through my mind, what could I do for this fella? And pretty soon, Wendy came in, and she's in her office, and she always looks through the window at me to make sure if I give her the eye, like, "Give me a phone call so I can get out of here," or something. I shouldn't have told you that, because now you're going to think when you come and see me and I get a phone call, it's a trick. But no, we wouldn't do that to any of you. This gentleman finally said, "Is okay if I use the restroom?" Sure. So he got up and went in the men's room. So now's my chance. So I went out and told Wendy what's going on and said, "I think I'm just going to have to give him something. I don't know if he's, feed me a line of bologna or what, but I just feel that this time I ought to do something." And so we got a little cash. I didn't give him all he needed. We gave him $50. So he was happy as a clam about that. And I gave him a ride down the road to another church and dropped him off. And, so he got $20 out of the next one. Well, I told him, just have them call me if they have a question. So the pastor down at the Nazarene church called me. "I got this guy here." He said, "I can call you." I said, "Yeah, I don't know if the guy is telling the truth or not," said, "but I told him the predicament I was in, that the Lord thought the Lord was testing me. I know, what's the coincidence? I'm rewriting this thing down. I'm studying about loving as Christ loves and enable him. And then the guy shows up at the door. How can I say, go thou away? And then I got to preach Sunday about loving everybody." So I was in this guilt trap. So I had to do something. Sometimes those are the situations where you realize that, yeah, there are a lot of people out there that are going to take advantage of us. As churches get duped all the time, and people know that. They know that there's going to be a soft touch, and if we're, like Jesus, we should help them out. That's why we have periodically people will show up in our foyer at like 12 o'clock right after the service. And they catch us at a real weak, bad time. And what do? And so it's kind of difficult. But, those are the times when we have to just realize that, okay, I'm using as much wisdom as I can here, but I just feel that I should do this, even though I know there's probably a great likelihood this guy's not telling me the truth. And I don't know if he was a fireman in New York and that's where he got cancer. I don't have any way of knowing that other than taking his word for it. I can't call the New York Fire Department and check him out. But I just feel it did what we did, and that's God's issue now. It's God's money. It's not mine. It's not the church's money, even though it came out of our petty cash. It's still God's money. And if somebody is going to do that, then they are ultimately accountable to him. And that's where I just have to leave it at that. And with a clear conscience, live with it. Now, as I told the pastor of the Nazarene church, if 6 months from now a guy shows up again, he ain't getting a dime from here. Unless any of you want to help him, give me your number and I'll pass it on to him. But the point out of all of that is, we can outsmart people, but we can't outsmart God. We can't deceive God. We can't outsmart him at all. And even if we think we can, and even if we try, and we slough off our responsibilities that he gives us, we're mocking him. Which is what it amounts to. God can't be fooled. God's not stupid. He's not gullible. He's all wise, and so we can't even play these spiritual games with God either. We can with each other, We can put the pious look on, and we can make up pious excuses for why we are not doing this or why we're doing something we shouldn't do, but God's not fooled. And so he gave this principle then. What you reap, you will sow. That's a guaranteed thing. There's no way around that. Like the law of gravity. It sticks. And so there's this unique connection in life with this whole principle of sowing and reaping. You ever thought about that? That you are here today. Each one of us is here today where we are because of decisions we made in the past. We made a choice. Some of you are here and in this church, you've been here in Kalamazoo all your life. You haven't gone anywhere else. That's fine. God didn't give you any other place to go and you're contented to stay where you are at. If God hadn't have moved me, I'd still be back home in Fremont up north and doing just fine. Probably be in jail by now, but I don't know. But no, I wouldn't have been. My brother would have, but not me. But we're all here because there was a decision or decisions that we made that brought us to this place. And where we are days from now, months or years from now, will be based upon decisions that maybe we have made yesterday or will make tomorrow. It's all connected. We're doing a sowing and reaping thing all the time. Sometimes it's significant in nature, and sometimes it's not as significant. Sometimes it's in real important things, and other times it's in everyday things. But we're going to sow, we're going to reap. Now, what about the matter of forgiveness? What if we make bad choices? What if we act irresponsibly and we do wrong? Doesn't God forgive us? And when God forgives us, He erases it, right? Well, the Bible says, yeah, He removes our sin and He takes it as far as the east is from the west. He buries it in the depths of the sea and He remembers them no more. And that's absolutely theologically correct. However, the principle of sowing and reaping is not done away with because that's like a law of gravity. It's not going to be reversed. You jump off the John Hancock building, you may realize immediately, bad decision. Shouldn't have done this. Can't erase it. Will God forgive you? Yeah, He will. He'll erase that sin, and you that won't keep you out of heaven, probably, if you repent on your way down. But you're not going to erase the seed you sown. The consequences of that irresponsible decision are going to be followed through. So everybody reaps what they sow. Now, there are two other aspects to this whole law of sowing and reaping, and you know what they are. We don't only sow what we reap, or reap what we sow, I should say. But we know the other aspect of this is we reap later than we sow. And it's the later part of it that gets tricky. Because the reaping might not happen right away. And so the later part of the reaping is why we so easily continue making bad decisions or keep sowing the wrong seed because everything seems to be going along just right when really it isn't. Harvest is coming. And it's the later part of it even that causes us to sometimes want to give up doing what is right. Because we're not seeing the fruit of what we're doing. And we fail to realize that maybe that fruit is going to be down the road later. But because we don't see the fruit of it right away, we get discouraged and wonder, why am I doing this? It's why we question our good choices. It's later is why we look at people who are doing the wrong things and we envy them because everything seems to be going great for them. And they're basking in their good fortune. And we're trying to do the right thing, but nothing comes of it, so we want to quit, give it up. But always remember, good or bad, reaping comes later than the sowing. The third part of this, though, is that reaping is greater than we sow. We reap in greater measure than what we sow. Now, the reaping is not always fair in our minds as human beings. Sometimes it seems a little harsh. If it's something negative that we've sown. Take, for example, if someone breaks into your house at night while you're there. It wakes you up because you hear the breaking glass. right away you grab the phone, you dial 911, you call the police and tell them somebody's breaking into my home. You hear them coming down the hall, they're looking for things. If you have a weapon, you grab it, maybe hold them at bay. But the police show up and they arrest the person, and fortunately you're unharmed. Now let's say that whole incident took place in 10 minutes time. From the time they broke in till the time the police arrived and came in your house and threw the handcuffs on this person. Only took 10 minutes. For some reason the police were fast in responding that night. So you get to court, goes through all the trial, he's found guilty, and then comes the day when the judge pronounces the sentence. And the judge says to the defendant, well, as I see in the report, it was 10 minutes from the time you broke into the house until the time you were arrested, so it was a 10-minute crime. Therefore, I sentence you to 10 minutes in jail. And you're saying, what? It's not fair. And your attorney is going nuts. The prosecutor is going nuts. So they argue with the judge, saying, okay, 10 minutes, 10 hours. Oh, how about that? No, this is wrong. You have sentencing guidelines. So comes down to, okay, 10 years in prison. That's more sensible. But then the defendant, he's crying out, unfair, unfair. It was only 10 minutes that it took, and I didn't even get anything. I didn't hurt anybody. I just broke a window, scared somebody. But 10 years? You got to be kidding me. And his attorney is going nuts. Justice is not always fair in our minds, is it? And when it comes to sowing and reaping, that's not always fair either, as we would look at it. I only sowed a little bit of wild oats. Why am I reaping this whole big bushel of junk now? It's the way it happens. So, it's a principle that still stands. Every time we practice irresponsibility or responsibility, we're going to reap benefit or burden. So our responsibility is in the sowing. If we go back to that illustration that I closed with last week, imagine that pie. And that pie that's in that round pan, that contains all the chaos in your life, all the junk that's going on. You didn't create all of it. Some of it other people created, and a lot, some of that stuff is the responsibility and the burden that you're bearing because of somebody else's poor decision or decisions, the stress that's in your life, and all this other stuff. But God doesn't want us to focus on everybody else's stuff, all that they've created. He wants us to focus on what slice of that pie belongs to us, to me. What's my slice? And as I said last week, when we look at that pie and look at the slice that's our responsibilities, we're seeing this little teeny thin slice maybe. But probably in reality, it's a little wider than that. The piece is a little bigger. And so while we sometimes have to carry the burden of somebody else, either through their irresponsibility or sometimes it's not anything they have done, there are burdens that come into our lives and things that we have to deal with that aren't our fault. Some sicknesses, we didn't ask for it. Cancers, that just happens. There are some things that happen because people are irresponsible. But at the same time, we still have to just look at what we are responsible for. Carry our own load. Stop worrying about somebody else's responsibility. Deal with your slice of the pie. And if you're sowing that which is good, and if you're being responsible and you're not reaping yet, don't quit. Because as he says in verse 9, let us not lose heart in doing good, for For in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So if all around us, everybody else is being careless, irresponsible, neglectful, not doing what they should be doing before the Lord, not carrying the responsibility of the church or their own Christian life, we're not accountable for them. We give account to ourselves. And in due time, we know that as those who reap bad seed will reap worse than what they sowed, those who have sown good seed will reap rewards bigger than they deserve to. Well, that's it for this lesson for tonight. Let's close in prayer.